Hello and welcome back to another edition of Podcast from the Edge with me, Peter Bruce. The year is hotting up nicely, and this is a particularly warm week in South Africa, both weather-wise and politics-wise. Last weekend, the ruling ANC-NEC met for a policy Lekgotla, and this week the cabinet meets for a Lekgotla of its own. A Lekgotla, for listeners who may not know or may live abroad, is a Sotho or Tswana word for meeting place or village assemblies, those sorts of things. And obviously it's become more recently used to talk about government policy sessions and strategy sessions. And in the old days, I'm talking about the last 29 years up until the last general election, these Lekgotlas are really box-ticking exercises in the ANC. But now that we have a government of national unity, a coalition, this week's cabinet Lekgotla will be particularly interesting. At the weekend, DA leader and agriculture minister John Steenhuisen formally declared a dispute with the ANC inside the government of national unity after President Cyril Ramaphosa had abruptly and slightly unexpectedly, even to his own party, I suspect, signed into law a new expropriation act, or a new version of it, which is really another red line for the DA, that Ramaphosa has seemingly crossed without so much as a by your leave. And with me to discuss both the events at the weekend and this week's ANC Lekgotla, and by the way, I think the DA are also meeting, their FedEx is meeting this week, is a colleague I really rate very highly, Natasha Marianne, a former Business Day political editor, deputy editor at the Financial Mail. And Marianne, welcome to Podcast from the Edge. You're now editor at large at Business Day, and you've been closely watching the temperature rise in the GNU. Should people be worried at all about an imminent split, you know, within the GNU with the DA either leaving or being asked to leave it?
Hi, Peter. Thanks for having me. Neither side want that. That's the indication we have from both the ANC and the DA. The ANC is not going to push out the DA, and the DA doesn't quite want to walk away. We know what the implications are if the GNU in its current form does not exist anymore. The ANC will either have to run a minority government, and the alternative to that is entering a coalition with Jacob Zuma's MK party and or the EFF. So the implications here are quite dire for there to be an immediate split without a fight over the problems that have been building up in the GNU since late last year. So it's not quite over yet. This week is a crucial week with the cabinet Lekgotla. The last cabinet meeting ahead of the budget last year was quite explosive, particularly around the NHI matter, and that issue is going to come to a head at this cabinet Lekgotla again. So with the expropriation bill signed, as well as the NHI hovering over the GNU, it's going to be a very tense and difficult cabinet Lekgotla, where the DA ministers and the ANC ministers are going to confront each other once again.
And so the confrontation last year, if I remember correctly, about the NHI, because the DA wasn't there, would have been between Treasury, perhaps, and the Department of Health. Or just remind us a little bit what that row was about at the time.
So there was a cabinet meeting in which the DA was present, where the NHI came up, and Minister Motsoaledi did take a very hardline stance in that meeting at that time. And it was around the formation of the medium-term development plan, which is the seventh administration or the GNU government's development plan for the next 5 years. Yeah. So that confrontation already happened. But Peter, you know, I was very struck last week when I was working on an NHI story. I approached the clearinghouse or the dispute resolution mechanism of the GNU, which is located in the presidency under Deputy President Paul Mashatile. And the secretary of that clearinghouse or dispute resolution mechanism said that the DA has not brought a formal dispute around NHI to the clearinghouse. which surprised me. I mean, the DA took the Bella Act to the clearinghouse, and that's where the talks and the negotiations happened around that. And, you know, we sort of the proclamation around, which included regulations, which the minister has to put together, came about. It was seen as a slight compromise. So, in my understanding, although other reporters at other publications have written differently, the Bella Act was never a red line for the DA. Yes, it was something they opposed, and it was a nice to have concessions on that. But the NHI absolutely marks a red line because of the dire implications on the economy. So this is where what I'm very confused about with the DA, why they didn't bring the NHI to the clearinghouse before this weekend. John announced on Saturday that he's logged the dispute. I did ask Helen Ziller, which is the chairwoman of the Federal Executive Committee, whether it was or was not brought before that clearinghouse, and she said not yet. When I asked the DA spokesperson for health why it wasn't, they said she replied that it will be. But I just find that there's something very strange about that.
Yeah. Natasha, wasn't there another issue where Ramaphosa, like he did with Bella, gave the two teams from the parties an amount of time to sort out their problems? Or am I thinking of something else? Because there were two instances where he said that, you know, this legislation had been sort of passed and signed by him, but needed to be discussed and differences smoothed out. And one certainly was the Basic Laws Amendment Act. And I wonder whether, I think the other one was the NHI, but I may have been wrong. Things happen so quickly. But there is no ongoing discussion between the parties, is there, as there was with Bella over NHI. They're simply in their trenches shouting at each other.
Exactly. But Peter, that's exactly what I thought last week when I was writing that piece for the Financial Mail. So I approached I approached that team that the president set up. Yeah. Helen Zille is on that team. So is, Dumisani Ntuli from the chief whip of the ANC in Parliament. So Corne Mulder is on that team. I approached the secretary of that team last week, and that's when they said that it wasn't actually brought up. And I assume that perhaps the DA was waiting for the processes between the president and business to have concluded first before it entered the fray on NHI.
Right. Yes, of course.
As we know, in September last year, business and the president met. They gave him proposals on November 4th.
He
acknowledged this week, but has not since responded.
Yeah. And we don't know where those talks are. Somebody made a proposal, I remember early on, a private group of medical specialists, I think, and that was the last we've heard about it. So let's just one thing before we continue. So we have the GNU, big strains in the GNU, and the consequences of its failing are dire, right? So, there's economic confidence. You can feel a bit of movement in the economy. People are beginning to talk up and be, Transnet is beginning to talk more about investments. Suddenly you've got a good story to tell, and as of other people, and there's a budget coming up, and the finance minister is going to want to have something positive to say. But with this kind of tension, and if we talk about the options, it's either the DA leaves and does a sort of supply and confidence arrangement from the opposition benches, or, as you say, the ANC forms a minority government, or it tries to do some sort of deal with MK or not, which sounds impossible because MK is premised on getting rid of Ramaphosa as president. But there is another possibility, surely, and that's to hold another election. So that where you can't form a government after one election, you have another one. Is that ever discussed in our case?
Nobody's ready for that. Nobody's discussed that. I don't I don't foresee the ANC wanting that. It hasn't recovered its support from MK in the way that it would want. I don't see the DA wanting that, being in the not having enough time in the GNU to actually prove itself. So the big players certainly wouldn't want that, and that's something you would need a two-thirds, quite a large majority in Parliament to get past. So I don't see a re-election on the cards.
Okay. So, so Natasha, so there was this Lekgotla at the weekend, right? And this is the ANC-NEC now meeting. And typically, I suspect, as I remember them, ANC meetings always break up into what they call commissions. And it's on the economy, on social policy or health or whatever it might be. And everyone goes off to their groups and people peel off, and there's some people who talk more than the other groups. And when in my day, Thabo Mbeki would walk around these meetings with a notebook, a foolscap notepad in his hand, taking copious notes at every commission that he stopped by. I don't know whether he still does it. I saw a picture of him at this weekend's meeting. But what's your what stood out for you this weekend, this past weekend, the NEC meeting?
What I found striking was almost the beating of the chest by Fikile Mbalula talking about the ANC, the president signing the expropriation bill into law, talking about how that bill passed through to the two houses of parliament, and how could the DA not expect the president to sign it into law? I also saw reaction from various other NEC members, supporters of President Ramaphosa, talking about his detractors, saying that the GNU and the DA as part of the GNU would neutralize the radical outlook of the ANC. But here we are with the president signing probably the most radical legislation they'd signed in a very, very long time, being the NHI, the Bela Act and the Expropriation Act. So I think my view is that internal ANC politics, internal alliance politics, and that very pesky National General Council coming in a couple of months' time has a lot to do with President Cyril Ramaphosa's posture on this. His posture on in signing the legislation and his posture toward the DA. There was also, in the NEC Lekgotla happened this weekend, but before that there was an NEC meeting. And in that NEC meeting, there were some discussions about attempts by Zilla to create a sort of two centers of perceptions that she was another center of power to the president. And this is part of the, those that don't agree with the GNU inside of the ANC, this was part of their criticism. So for me, Ramaphosa is balancing all of those things, his internal dynamics in the ANC as well as the dynamics inside the GNU.
So how does he, you wrote a really nice piece in Business Day this morning. The argument basically being that he's got the upper hand, right? And the question that occurred to me as I was reading it was, where does he have the upper hand? Because is it in his own party? Is it in the GNU? Let's talk about the party for the moment. So the party's fractures, there's a whole, conspiratorial, probably not even conspiratorial, it's simply looking for a way to hammer him. But, I don't know what you call them. Is it a left-wing? It might even be a right-wing faction of the party who doesn't support Cyril, which would want to tar him with the brush of doing business with the DA or Helen Zille or whatever it might be. How does he, does he survive by feeding them these little things in the NHR, Bella, now the Expropriation Act? And is it simply like a beast that he has to keep feeding, or does he get to the point where he can say, actually, I've got this now, and things can settle and we're going to be okay? I mean, how you get your the headline on the piece and the intro, you're pretty confident that he's in a strong position in the ANC now.
I do think so. So, Peter, what's also happening in the coming 2 weeks is the top seven of the ANC is going to they call it reconfigure, but it is in actual fact, announce a new interim leadership structures for the Gauteng and the KwaZulu-Natal provinces. Those two provinces were dissolved by the last NEC because of their poor electoral performance.
Right. So this just for also readers or listeners who don't know, the provincial party executives of the ANC in Gauteng, Joburg, and KwaZulu-Natal, both provinces where the ANC did spectacularly badly in the last election, are going to pretty much now be disbanded and replaced. Not the governments in those provinces, mind you, but the provincial politics that underlie those. Okay, and how difficult is that going to be? Well, now that they're going to do it, that must be some kind of a victory for Ramaphosa, because there's some scary people in those provinces, aren't there? In Gauteng, you have a potential rival in Panyaza Lesufi, the premier. And in KwaZulu-Natal, the ANC is just about, the ANC has sort of disappeared in a very scary way if you were a supporter.
Exactly. So the ANC top leadership, which includes Ramaphosa, is going to announce new leaders for those two provinces. But exactly what you said, Panyaza Lesufi has been the face of the anti-DA campaign inside the ANC, the anti-DA as part of the GNU campaign. And very shortly after he began this very informal campaign, but, you know, wearing a T-shirt saying, "Don't kill Chris Hani again," which is anti-GNU, an anti-GNU symbol in the ANC. Very shortly after that, President Ramaphosa signed the Bella Act into law. And so, in terms of internal politics, he has neutralized this grouping that's very anti the DA, that's saying Ramaphosa is selling out. And when he replaces Panyaza's PEC, as well as the KZN PEC, he can effectively reconfigure the whole thing in order to, pack those structures with more competent people, and potentially people who are less hostile toward the GNU, less, more amenable to perhaps bringing the DA in at a local government level. So for me, that's what it means. Internally, he's neutralizing his internal opponents. It's also neutralizing the noise around the ANC, that coming from MK and the EFF, saying the ANC is becoming right wing by going into coalition with the DA. So, that entire wing that's been very loud in its critique. And I mean, Peter, you can actually see it in his closing speech yesterday, where he said those who were doubtful about the efficiency of our participation in the GNU and were doubting whether we will be able to continue to execute the policies of our movement, that we are deviating, they now see that we are staying the course. So he's, he was proving that point to his detractors.
So, I mean, it would be a remarkable thing where, first of all, if he's able to affect local government, I'm talking particularly in Tshwane, Pretoria and Johannesburg, and bring the DA back into government in some form, not necessarily as mayors, but in whatever local coalitions affect, that would be borderline miraculous. Does Panyaza Lesufi survive all of this?
I think he will. Panyaza is a pawn to whichever faction is in charge. He wasn't very dominant in his PEC in any event. His PEC was dominated by loyalists of Lebogang Maile, who is, yeah. So he is. He was articulating his PEC's line, but there's a lot of sympathy among Cyril Ramaphosa supporters for him in the PEC. In the NEC. So he will probably survive and form part of the structure, but it's doubtful whether he will make it back as its leader or its chairperson.
Yeah. I heard a strange conspiracy theory the other day, and I'm sure, like me, you follow this Twitter account, X account called Ghulam, who was suggesting that Lesufi had been, in fact, quite keen to have the DA in his provincial government, but had been forced to play another game by other forces in the province. I can't remember quite what it was. The Ghulam account only did one post on that, and I'm afraid I read it and moved on. But Lesufi is a quite remarkable politician in that, you know, he's been able to say for a long time whatever he wants without almost ever being held to account for it.
Absolutely. And I think that's exactly the problem with him. You never know where he stands. So the Cyril, the Ramaphosa people thought he was with them and never moved against him, never acted against him. We know David Makura, his predecessor, is a big fan, they were always seen as quite close, and he's ensconced in Lutuli House at the moment. He's a key prong in the ANC there. So nobody moved against Panyaza Lesufi, but for me, he's quite an ineffectual, useless politician. Whether or not he supports, he's always been against any sort of arrangement with the DA. He's quite vociferous about that. He is the person who, you know, would not want to go into a coalition with the DA, even if the rest of the leadership may have wanted to in the province. So yeah,
Natasha, when you at a meeting like that we had at the weekend and the one coming up, frankly, but let's talk about the weekend for the moment longer. How are you able to gauge the quality of the inputs that are made by these commissions? In other words, I mean, the decisions that come out of a Lekgotla like this, do we take them seriously? Are they, you know, are they typed up and passed around and are they voted on? Or is it simply, you know, a lot of, you know, well-meaning party supporters voting for Christmas all over and over again, voting for the same things, even though they know they've never worked in the past. So more black empowerment, even though it hasn't created a single job, more this, more that. I mean, is there ever any real serious kind of, you know, discussion about, you know, whether to change tack or try something new?
It's a little bit of both. It's a little bit of both, Peter, because so there was the wishy-washy bit in this Lekgotla where Parkstar spoke at length about this transformation fund that he was at pains to explain is just an idea at the moment. It's you know, they still it's a little bit of both, a little bit of fairy tale. But some of the things that are discussed at these Lekgotlas do actually make it into government. The Treasury was dead set against giving Eskom a bailout when it did. And it was the NEC Lekgotla that actually drew the line in the sand and resolved that bailout had to be given. And yesterday in the briefing, the NEC's Economic Transformation Committee, chaired by the Deputy Minister of Trade and Industry, Zuko Godlimpi, said that the ANC was proven right in giving Eskom that bailout because it enabled Eskom to end load shedding shortly before the elections. As we know, we sort of over 300 days into that now. So they've now requested a similar bailout for Transnet, package for Transnet. So a lot of the time, actually, these Economic Transformation Committee recommendations do go through. I mean, the NHI came through the NEC Lekgotla, you know, and it informs the SONA and it informs the budget of Enoch's budget.
And, is that just a coincidence? I've noticed in the past 2 weeks, there's been a sea change in the comms, first of all, from Transnet. They're giving interviews to people and you can get down to port managers in Richards Bay, port managers here and there. The CEO has given, I think, a couple of really good and interesting and solid interviews to Hilary Joffe, our colleague on Business Day. So they, you know, and they're going to concession a lot and they're talking about this and talking about that. I wonder to what extent the Lekgotla isn't used to set up a request like that for a bailout for Transnet, because Transnet obviously has to fund a lot of, you know, it can concede things to the Filipinos and Durban or rail train operators to work some of the lines. But they can't fix the line and they can't fix the network and the signals and all that's got to be done by Transnet, presumably. And you know, I wonder whether, in a way, it's not a bit of a setup where somebody says, well, let's get this Lekgotla to say, let's get this commission to argue for, you know, a big bailout for Transnet, and we'll sort it out in the budget to come, or the SONA, it'll inform the SONA, and the SONA informs the budget. Well, theoretically, anyway, I suppose. I did know also that one of the things that hasn't been mentioned is the possibility of any kind of concession at the port in Cape Town. So we've got Richards Bay, Port Elizabeth, Gqeberha, all of those are going to get a little something. Cape Town gets nothing. Would that be because it's DA, or would that be, I mean, is the ANC that petty, or the government that petty that it would, that it wouldn't facilitate improvements in that port? Because Cape Town's apparently particularly bad when it comes to delays and being slow and its technologies and all that kind of stuff.
I would imagine that they would be that petty, Peter, but I'm just terribly cynical. I totally think they would be that petty. But we know that Transnet, you know, Transnet received a 47 billion rand guarantee in 2023.
Yeah.
In 2023. So they do need, you know, they do need that bailout in order to get things done. And we know that Transnet at the moment is the logjam actually holding up the economy. Tando Mayeko at Business Day has been quite good on reporting.
No,
on
she's
this.
Been very good. Yeah, I agree.
She's been very good. Yeah, reporting previously that 70 billion would be needed to invest over the next 5 years to get it up to scratch. Yeah. So.
Well, if like me, you've had the patience to read the entire network statement put out by the Department of Transport in December. You'll know where that 70 billion rand number comes from. I mean, actually, it's really interesting to read, particularly because it's a Transnet document and it's incredibly long with a million annexes. But it's, you know, the system is so broken. It's almost, and they say that it's completely broken. I remember making a note of it in for something I was writing not too long ago, but I'm sure I probably lost it now. But basically, the network statement says that it is in a critical state. 70 billion would just get it back to operating as it was 10 years ago. Doesn't modernize it, you know. And somebody, I was talking to somebody of one of my podcasts last week, one of the train operators who will bid for a concession. And he was telling me that, you know, we have these issues with signaling and trains in South Africa. In America now, the trains literally talk to each other. The driver doesn't put the brakes on. You know, software does that. So we are really far behind.
Interestingly, the DA at its meeting on expectations for the SONA, Transnet is also up there.
I know. So Hajra Omajid wrote a piece in today's Monday's paper. She mentions Transnet. And, you know, this, it struck me as I was reading that too, because everybody's now talking at each other through the media. If John Steenhuisen is going to make concessioning Cape Town Harbour one of the things that he wants to get into the GNU, it's going to be something else that he's going to, you know, get let down on by Cyril, because the CEO of Transnet says that's not going to happen. Cape Town is literally off, not up for discussion at the moment. And I know that the DA in the Cape, and in fact, in the city of Cape Town too, in the mayor's office, Jordan Hill Lewis, they're very keen for more devolution, particularly of public transport into the Cape, Which, of course, the ANC would be loath to do because it might, you know, the DA had a pretty good record of running its operations well. And, you know, you want to give them as few opportunities as possible if you're the ANC to show them, for them to show you up. But Natasha, let's talk a little bit too quickly about the expropriation bill, because your piece this morning also goes into it a little bit. I don't understand why people have become so hysterical about this. Why would the expropriation bill have caused the outcry, particularly from the DA? And I suppose I should ask somebody in the DA, and I will, but maybe you can put yourself in their shoes as well. You make the point that, you know, in the entire bill, which talks all about all sorts of expropriation of land, which is normal in any country, you know, if you want to build power lines or railway lines or whatever it might be, what matters in the South African context is that there'd be some expropriation without compensation, or nil compensation, I think, as the bill now states. That seems to be, but the bill that has gone through Parliament, which the DA will know, I'm sure, intimately, contains none of the threats that initially arose when this, when expropriation without compensation first arose. It's a watered-down bill that if you were the DA or anybody, you would have thought, well, thank God we got away, you know, thank God that's all that they've done. But instead, it's become, the response has been loud and potentially very damaging.
It has, because it makes people, it sets people's emotions on fire. And you know, Peter, we have almost 200 pieces of areas in our law where expropriation can happen. By the president, by the premier, by the water minister, for example, when she wants to build a, he or she wants to build a dam, like you said, Eskom and transmission lines. The reaction was quite hysterical, but the backstory is that the public works minister had written to the president asking him not to sign it because there is a contradictory section that has been identified by legal experts to the DA. They got some legal opinion, and the opinion said that in one area of the legislation, it says that no compensation, when the government comes to the conclusion of no compensation, it has to be ratified by a court. And in another area, it says it doesn't make quite that specific. So yeah. That's their problem. They did write to the president to tell him that, and he disagreed that there was that kind of lacuna in the legislation. And he sent it back to the public works minister and said, sorry, I disagree that there's a problem there. And then he signed it into law a couple of months later. But from my understanding with discussions that I've had over the last few days is the president gave no one an indication that he was going to sign the legislation. Parties had their constituency up in an uproar, their constituencies in an uproar without any warning whatsoever from the president, and that was the problem. The PA's constituency is against the legislation, as is the FF Plus, as is the IFP, as well as the DA. So he didn't give anyone an opportunity to prepare themselves, their communication machinery with their constituencies, an opportunity to do that. He just signed it into law. So my understanding is that's the big problem. He thinks he's still in charge of an ANC government, is the direct quote from an insider that I spoke to yesterday.
Yeah, yeah. But you know, Dean McPherson, who's the Minister of Public Works. I mean, he was very quick to stand up and say, you know, I won't. Well, first of all, he hasn't countersigned the law, or said he wasn't going to. His deputy, Sihle Zikalala, he was the premier of KwaZulu-Natal during the unrest in 2021. And I remember of him during that period is him approaching somebody who'd been arrested for looting. And he was being held, this person, And Zikalala tried to kick him, and he couldn't even kick him. And then the guy managed to scramble loose, and Zikalala tried briefly to chase him and kicking him at the same time. And it was an absolute joke. It was pathetic. And I wonder sometimes what it is that, you know, the president of the ANC has to choose from when he gets to put people in his cabinet. Anyway, Zikalala is in the unfortunate position now of having been demoted to deputy minister to make way for Dean McPherson. And they're both now contradicting themselves, right, about expropriation. The deputy saying they're going to implement it, the minister saying no. That's another mess. You know, I mean, if everybody wants this country to be an investable proposition, and if you played out some of this stuff internationally to people who cared, it wouldn't look very good at all. Natasha, let's come back to Cyril for the moment. Where can Cyril rest? I mean, what is Cyril's happy place? Where does he find some peace here?
I think he's in his happy place, Peter. You know him personally. You should know the answer to that. But I think he's in his happy place. I think he thrives on this stuff. I think, you know, I think he's quite a smooth negotiator. I recall the dinner that GNU partners had with him, and they were all so taken with him and you know, the puppy eyed in that meeting. And I think the ANC, he's in a good place with the ANC as well.
Is he?
Particularly after this weekend, after this Lakhotla, because everything that his detractors said he is, he's proving that he's not. And without him, let's be honest, Deputy President Paul Mashatile's the last tracking poll, I think his popularity was around 11%. So without Ramaphosa going into the next local government election, the ANC can kiss Johannesburg goodbye. You know, it doesn't have another leader, a leader coming up in its ranks that has the same gravitas. So I think he's in a very strong position. I think what he's trying to do is neutralize any potential infiltration by MK with the disgruntled people in the ANC, you know, disgruntled about the DA. He's trying to dismantle that. He's trying to take the wind out of the MK and EFF sails. For the first time in a while, I think he's in his happy place. I think he has the leverage he needs to eliminate the people that he needs to eliminate.
Do you think that he understands the pressures on John Steenhuisen or Helen Zille inside the DA? So what he does to them when he signs a bill like this? Or does he not care?
I don't think he cares, Peter.
So he wouldn't care if they left or not?
I think he would care if they left, but I think he knows that they won't. Maybe, you know, I think he knows that the risk for the country, I think he understands their appreciation for the risk for the country if they leave.
Because in some way, he has to make a very careful calculation, not only about his own party, but equally about the DA. And how can we be sure he's got the DA kind of right, unless they're telling him something they're not telling the rest of us?
Well, let me take you to illustrate this. Let me just take you to Carol Payton's piece today. The DA blinked on the number of cabinet posts that they asked for. They asked for 12. They got 6. They blinked on the Bella legislation. I've always known it wasn't a red line, but they agreed, the minister signed on the dotted line, so they agreed to its promulgation. And then the third thing, I suspect they will blink on the Expropriation Act, because even speaking to specialists, agribusiness, Annalise Crosby, Tembeka Layotubi, who was a judge on the Land Claims Court, says it's a benign piece of legislation that's very cumbersome to implement. I think they will blink. So I think Cyril has made that calculation. He's not a stupid man.
Yeah.
I think he knows that they won't jump. But the NHI, Peter, I think that's he. I think he's pushing it a little far when it comes to the NHI, because I think that the NHI really is a red line for the DA.
But knowing him as a negotiator and his own view of himself as being a good negotiator, he would also possibly reckon to himself that he could pull it off. You know, if you could do enough of a compromise deal to push it through. Of course, it would be in his interest to wait for a while, because he would need that victory, perhaps at a later date, perhaps closer to 2027, when he comes up for re-election, as when the ANC next, you know, Cyril will either stand again, which I doubt, or he'll have his own candidate. And that's when he might need to say, well, we've done the NHI, and you wonder whether the DA would want to give him that in some form. I mean, I had a chat with somebody in the DA over the weekend. I was just trying to, I'm on my phone. Basically just says the DA cannot be party to the NHI, simply not possible. And I think that's probably right. Until it isn't, you know, until the NHI becomes quite a benign as the expropriation bill. Remember how ugly it used to sound when it first started? You know, where you basically have an NHI for people who don't have jobs or whatever it might be, and everybody who has jobs gets some kind of medical cover. I mean, I know people now who, companies that are offering medical cover for R100 a month. It's no problem. You get, yeah. You know, if you're a company, you can offer people the right now to consult with a clinical nurse, to have access to a doctor if the nurse thinks that you need it, to get medications. And lots of companies are signing up. Standard Bank, Sunlum, you know, these are all companies that are encouraging their clients now to join some of these schemes. There's a whole network of smaller private medical aids offering some sort of cover now to workers, as it were. These things are all, you know, possible compromises that one could make on the way. You reckon we get to the end of this week and we'll still be intact, however, right? It's all going to be okay.
I think so. And Peter, you know, the NHI is a fascinating piece of legislation if you look at it. The Treasury says there's no money for the NHI. You know, the Minister of Finance has, I think you said it on public platforms, that there's no money for the NHI. So
last year he was saying there's no money. He was saying there was no money for Eskom. Then there's now, up next there'll be no money for Transnet, but they'll find some. I mean, one of the interesting things that I've been discovering all through my reading is that, you know, if the ANC was smarter with its own treasury, they would begin to say, listen, we understand you can't just throw money at Transnet or Eskom, but you can throw money at, no matter what cap you might put on fiscal spending, whatever, you can throw money on things that are going to give you a return, because why wouldn't you, you know? And you can borrow money to invest. You can borrow money for investable projects. And I'm sure we're going to see more of that. But anyway, Natasha, how lovely to be able to talk to you again. Thank you so much for your insight and your wisdom and your time. Thank you for listening. I'll be back next week with another edition of Podcast from the Edge. Until then, bye-bye, and keep as safe as you can.